The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
24 hours a day, 7 days a week. The news never stops. Life goes on around town and around the world. You need a talk show that keeps track of it. A program with bold opinions that's always open to your views. That is this show. Welcome to the Mark Davis Show on 660 AM, The Answer.
It's the 8 o'clock hour. And we are glad you are here. And you're going to be glad you are here, too. I hold in my hands a book, and it looks, at first glance, kind of like a kid's book. And I grew up, you know, reading The Little Engine That Could, Horton Hears a Who, the Dr. Seuss stuff, the kind of... And on the front, there's a friendly-looking caveman dressed in an American flag animal skin of some type, and it is called Donald Drains the Swamp. Donald is a caveman in a cave community of cavemen, cavewomen, and cave kids. If I can do it justice, a little bit of an excerpt, because Donald has a swamp to drain, and he does it, and the book, told in a story that's accessible to kids that every kid should know, but it's really for us grown-ups, with beautiful illustrations, goes like this. Once the swamp was drained, everything looked different. It was beautiful. Flowers bloomed, and trees grew. But after that, the people still couldn't talk to the king. What was the point of all they had done? Then a little girl had an idea. What if Donald were our new king? She asked. Donald, everyone shouted. Would you be our new king and live in the castle and let us talk to you when we have a problem? You don't need a king, Donald said. You're free now. A king orders his people around. Whoever leads a free people has to take his orders from them. You mean like a president? The cave people said. And it's just a couple of pages out of The Greatness of Donald Drains the Swamp, an allegory for the ages. Eric Metaxas wrote it. He's written a lot. We've talked to him a lot, and he's got a show now, and it's just awesome to say hi to Eric Metaxas. Eric, congratulations. This is just a great concept.
Thank you so much. Nobody has gotten the book better than you did just now in what you said. And by the way, you're reading of it?
Yes.
How much do I owe you?
I am available.
I mean, that is so beautiful because I did a dramatic reading of it, the whole thing. It's on YouTube now and stuff, but it really you really did it justice. And of course, we've got to be clear. When they say, you know, hey, we want to make you the king, it's just like George Washington, right? He says, you don't need a king. You're free now. A free people tells their leaders what to do, and the leaders have to do it. And they say, you mean like a president? He goes, yeah. And he goes, and if that's what you're looking for, I'm your caveman. So we've got campaign buttons printed up that say, he's my caveman, because I think we need to understand that he understands what it means to give the government back to we the people. It's the most basic thing, and when you have all the bitterness in the news and everything like that, we've got to go back to basics. So in this book, Donald Drains the Swamp, I said, I want to go back to the basics and say, what has this president understood that got him elected and will get him elected again? It's real simple. The government belongs to the people, and he serves the people. That's the kind of leader you're looking for, not a king, not a Brussels EU bureaucrat. Listen, I put it in a kid's book. I've written many kids' books. It is a myth. It is a fable for every age. We need some happy stuff on our side of the political spectrum. The left is always putting out children's books mocking the president. Stephen Colbert has the number one book in America mocking the president, and it's a kid's book. And I said, I've got to put something out that is a kid's book that adults are going to get. They're going to get it for their liberal neighbors and for their neighbors that are on the fence. They don't know which way to go. Donald Drains the Swamp is meant to be fun. We need to laugh, and we need to celebrate what is happening in America. It's a phenomenon, and 40 years from now, we're going to look back on this period. We're going to say, look what happened in America.
Look what we did. Look what happened, and look how everybody freaked out. That's how you know the change is real, because if half of America wasn't freaking out, then you know the change really is not real. And Donald Drains the Swamp is available Amazon, everywhere. everywhere fine books are sold. And it just has a magnificent look. It has a kid's book look, and the words are those of Eric Metaxas, but obviously any kid's book is hangs heavy on illustrations. Who's Tim Raglan?
Well, Tim Raglan is one of my dearest friends in the world. We've been friends for many years, and we did a lot of kids' books together, and he is the one that sold me on the idea of this president. When I was back in the primaries, when I was kind of wondering, and I'm a New Yorker, and so I kind of had a negative view of Trump. He's kind of vulgar. I don't know. Listen, I'm a conservative Christian. I don't know. He said to me, Eric, this is Tim Raglan, the illustrator. He said, Eric, this man is an American folk hero. You need to watch these rallies and see what is happening. And I watched some of the rallies, and I finally got it. I said, I've never seen anything like it. This man is an American folk hero. And it got in my head that if he gets elected president, I need to do a kid's book for adults, right? Like Tim and I always do books that are for everybody. Mm-hmm. And I said, I'm going to do it with Tim Raglan. There is nobody on the planet who gets this better than he does. So he lives in Kansas. I got together with him in Kansas. We wrote the whole book in Wichita, Kansas, and he illustrated it, of course. But he didn't just illustrate it. He didn't just illustrate it and didn't just inspire it. He helped me to write it. Some of the best stuff in this book, I'm not going to say what, came out of his mouth and his brain and not mine. And I'm telling you, it is something that Tim loves this country. He's a patriot and a Christian. And I really thought nobody in the world should draw this book except for him. And it was just, it wasn't easy. He's a busy guy, but I am thrilled to death. Our side needs something to celebrate with. You know, once you get your Make America Great Again hat, what's next? We need a narrative. We need a story. Hey, listen, maybe a year from now, you know, there'll be an animated cartoon version of this. We're working on all kinds of stuff. Mike Lindell is creating a My Pillow version of this book. I'm not
Good
making
Lord.
It up. It says, he's my caveman on the pillow.
Tremendous.
So I just think that we need to step into the culture with some fun stuff, stuff that's not bitter, stuff that actually celebrates America and what America is all about. So
Eric Metaxas is here. EricMetaxas.com, a good place to find all things Eric, including the various other things he's written. Many of it very high-minded, a lot of it very serious, but always with a kind of an upbeat countenance that has come to signify Eric and his work, both in print and in the radio world. And Eric, of course, is a fellow Salem broadcaster. How are the shows going? What's the year been like for you on radio?
Oh, man. Well, as you know, I mean, I'm a little complicated, right? In other words, I don't just do political news talk. I don't just do Christian radio talk. I mix it up. Mm-hmm. So one day I'm talking to Sebastian Gorka or Monica Crowley or Tucker Carlson. You know, I do that, and I love it, and that's who I am. But the next day, you know, I'm talking to a pastor about some part of Scripture or a book he wrote. And the next day, you know, I may be talking about something that happened in the news that has nothing to do with politics or with faith. So I'm all over the map. I call it the show about everything. But I have to say, one thing I love is doing this show. It's I never had an ambition to do radio. I've done some TV, and I'll probably do a lot more TV. But doing the Eric Metaxas show on radio has been one of the most fun adventures of my life. I know I'm on in the Dallas area. I'm all over the country, but it is so much fun. And if you don't like one show, listen the next day, and you'll probably like it.
It's like Texas weather. If you're not having a good time, wait a minute. Exactly.
That's
right. And I think
the last time
we talked about a book was If You Can Keep It, which is probably a couple years ago now.
Yeah, that's exactly 2 years ago. And you know what, Mark? No kidding. This book is the kids' version of If You Can Keep It. If You Can Keep It is a book that I wrote because I finally understood, imagine, in my 50s, I finally understood some things about the American experiment that I had never seen before, and I just about went insane. I said, I have to tell every American, we have forgotten the basics that Franklin said, you know, if you can keep it, meaning the people, we're going to govern ourselves, and we've kind of forgotten what that means. We kind of think like we farmed it out, you know? You can't farm it out. We have to vote. We have to be informed. We have to understand what it means to be an American. All that stuff is vital. And in this book, at the end of the book, when they say to Donald, after he drains the swamp and all the swamp creatures scurry away chasing the money to the horizon, they say, hey, we'd like to make you our new king. And he says, no. And it's exactly what George Washington did. He says, I'm offended at the idea of king. You're free. We fought for freedom. We fought and died for freedom, for liberty, for self-government. I don't want to be a king. It's so fundamental that many of us have forgotten it. And I'm not kidding. I've had campaign buttons printed up that say, he's my caveman. If you get us an address, I can send you a bunch to give away. But I really think that we need to celebrate who we are as Americans. And this book, as a friend put it, he goes, this is the kids' version of If You Can Keep It, you know, because even little kids need to understand what is America, why don't we have a king, and what does it mean when the government is out of touch with the people. I mean, the whole thing about the swamp, of course, I make it funny in the book, but the swamp creatures, you know, they're nasty. They don't like the people who live outside the swamp. So when Donald the caveman goes to see what the problem is, why can't the people talk to the king? They say, listen, king doesn't talk to anybody unless they live in the swamp. You want to live in the swamp? Maybe we can work something out. And he's like, no, I don't want to live in the swamp. I don't like the swamp. And then later on, he starts to dig a trench. It's the biggest, best trench ever dug.
It's huge.
It's huge, and he's going to get the people who live in the swamp to pay for it. That's not true. But he's digging the trench, and he realizes that the swamp is made of money. No wonder they live here. Now he understands what has happened, and now he understands why we've got to drain the swamp. And some of the swamp creatures you're going to recognize,
yes,
kids will not get the joke.
That's okay. It's kind of like the best old Bugs Bunny and Roadrunner stuff. Where was it?
The kids
were entertained,
right.
But there was something in there.
When you're 9 years old, you don't get it. That's
it.
Right.
But the grown-ups had a wink and a nudge for each other. Eric Metaxas, the book is Donald Drains the Swamp, based on a true story. Oh, yes, it is. Check it out on Amazon or wherever. Eric, congratulations. Continued success to you. Much appreciate you. And boy, carry on, my friend.
Thank
we'll
you,
talk
thank
soon.
You. Let's take Stephen Colbert off the bestseller chart.
Final 60 seconds, because this is why something like this is so important, because in the Colbert narrative and the dominant media culture narrative, America is in a swirling cauldron of hell. We're all miserable. We're divided. We're all filled with angst, and we hate each other. I have never been happier. I mean, I loved Reagan. We're old enough to remember Reagan. It was my young adulthood. I loved it.
That's right, me
too. But we have dug out of even decades more with complicity of Republicans and Democrats,
That's a deep hole.
And President Trump, God love him. I don't love every tweet. I don't love every policy. But there is an upbeat and positive,
redemptive
nature.
Exactly correct.
I'm thrilled.
That's why I wrote
it's
the book, Mark.
Yep.
It is absolutely what you just said is right. We need to celebrate, and we need to have something to celebrate with. Say, this is the real narrative. Most people in America get it.
That's it. Donald Drains the Swamp, Eric Metaxas, and Tim Ragland. Eric, thank you, man. Appreciate it very, very much.
God bless you. Appreciate it.
God
myself.
Bless you.
Thank
right
you.
Back. EricMetaxas.com to learn about other stuff Eric is doing, and it's a lot. 866-660-5759. Mark Davis, 821. Little Bruce Hornsby. The Road Not Taken. All righty, let's take the road to your phone calls. I got all kinds of audio from overnight, but that can sit tight. We have real people with real jobs and real lives who are trying to sprinkle us into their day, and we appreciate it. 866-660-5759. We're in Mesquite. Daniel, hey, Mark Davis, welcome. How are you?
Hey, pretty good, Mark. How are you doing this morning?
Good, thank you.
Good. Hey, listen, aside from just having the wrong ideas, when Mr. O'Rourke speaks, he just sounds so hollow. It sounds like he has zero experience when he's speaking, and that's kind of what, for me, just doesn't, you know.
Well, okay, it's kind of funny. The filter we all see things through. Does his communication feel wanting to you because you disagree with virtually everything he's saying? Because he is not ill-spoken, he's not illiterate, he is not fumbly-mouthed, and he has exactly as much congressional experience as Ted Cruz. They both came into the Congress in 2012. So I'm wondering if
I'll tell you why.
Tell me.
Because Mr. Obama, when he spoke, he actually spoke very, very well, but he had the wrong ideas as well, and that's what encouraged a lot of people to vote for him. But this guy, he just... it just sounds so hollow, at least to me.
Now that, you know what, you've delivered a superb triangulation, because obviously the Obama agenda was completely opposite to everything you believe, but you saw in him, it's like there was more meat on the bone. You disagreed with everything, but there was more, it was more steak and less sizzle. I think that's fair. Thanks. Okay, let me go back. It's 2004, and I'm in Boston at the John Kerry Convention, the Republican Convention that year had been in New York. This was, the Bush second term, the Bush re-coronation, and the Democrats, it was the setup for Bush-Kerry 2004. And, of course, that was the keynote speaker was a young Illinois state senator named Barack Obama. And we all kind of looked at each other on conservative Radio Row and said, uh-oh. And needless to say, our fears were well-founded. An Obama speech, an Obama on a debate stage. You know what? I think the gentleman has a good point about President Obama's. He probably delivered a meatier, more scholarly, more substantive leftist buffet than Beto does. I think what Beto has that Obama lacks is a certain relatability and sincerity. Obama always struck me as a cool guy. Hey, look at me, I'm cool. He wasn't real programmed or real artificial, but there was a haughtiness to Barack Obama, always was and still is. Beto has been able to pitch himself, and I think this is pretty true, as just sort of, you know, down there with the common folk and, you know, relating and, you know, getting all sweaty and, you know, just getting down there in the grit with the real folks. And I think that has probably helped him image wise in a big way. I think O'Rourke is more likable than Obama ever was. Likeability having a definition that has nothing to do with politics. Joe Biden, for example, very likable. John Kerry, totally unlikable. So just to provide a couple of examples. A lot of people are making the Beto Obama comparison, and the reason they're doing it is they are wondering if the best case scenario for Beto happens, and the best case real world scenario for Beto is a miracle finish in which Ted Cruz only beats him by about 3 or 4. And if that happens and it's that close, and by the way, it's your job and mine to make sure that does not happen. But if it does, that will be a springboard for Beto 2020. Because think about it. What the heck else do the Democrats have? Until Michelle Obama announces, they got nothing of any real import or any real consequence. Are Bernie and Joe Biden still technically alive? Yes, they are. But this new generation, is Elizabeth Warren still around? Yes, but no one cares anymore. Ugh. Kamala Harris and Cory Booker committed political suicide with their antics during the Kavanaugh hearings. So who in the world else is there? There's buzz about Julian Castro now. And he has a campaign skill set, obviously has the Hispanic thing going for him in a Democratic Party that is all about identity politics. There's nothing wrong with Julian Castro, but there's no rock star vibe there either. Beto has a rock star vibe. Michelle Obama has the biggest rock star vibe of all, and that's why that's the one human being I fear in 2020. The one. Now, others may arise. We'll see. But Beto could use Beto's chances of winning are zero. His chances of a close finish exist only as far as Texas Republicans are lazy and complacent, and we must not be. We must deliver for Ted the near double digit win that will send the Democrats away dispirited, thinking better of ever challenging with this kind of money again. 866-660-5759. We are in Weatherford. Walter, hey, Mark Davis, welcome. How are you?
Hi, Mark.
Hey.
I think the Republicans are going to clean sweep and not by a small margin on all the toss-ups.
Like in the House?
House and Senate.
Oh, well,
everything.
Well, huh. Oh, wow. Okay, why?
Well, this is the first time that the disaffected and the, you know, the people that are skeptics and everybody are going to have a chance to declare whether they're in or out on what's happening right now. And I think that all of this other stuff on the polls and everything is just noise trying to beat it down.
Yeah.
But it's coming.
Well, I tell you what. I mean, in the House, there are about 30 or 35 toss-ups. I don't think they're all going to go Republican. But if a majority of them do, if we can win 18 or 19 or 20 of those 35, then we're going to remain comfortably in Republican hands. In the Senate toss-ups, I mean, literal, so close that the polls don't seem to lean either way, there are five of them. And that's Florida, where Rick Scott is running against Bill Nelson, Indiana, where Joe Donnelly is fighting for his life, Missouri, where Claire McCaskill is fighting for her life against Josh Hawley, Nevada, where Dean Heller is on the rise, and Arizona, where Martha McSally is absolutely going to beat Kyrsten Sinema. Could we go five for five on those? I think we can get four of them, because there are a couple that say lean Democrat. And that's Montana and West Virginia, and I think John Tester and Joe Manchin are in serious trouble. So, yeah, I think it's going to be a really good night in the Senate. I hope you're right about the House. Boy, do I!
I think we win by nine on an average across the country. We're going to destroy them.
Well, would you do me a favor? Because listen, people say that I am carrying around too much optimism. I am Eeyore compared to you. Down in the dumps from Winnie the Pooh.
I'm just a schlub out here working.
Hey, listen, everybody's life gives them a thumb on the pulse of something. And so I do talk shows for a living. That in no way does that mean that my crystal ball or my gut feeling is any better than yours. I pray you're right, and thank you. Guy seems to be talking red wave. You know, just the absolute red wave. I've talked about the red beachhead, which is a structure that prevents the blue wave from hitting the shore. And my thought on the Senate is that out of the nine or so states where Democrats are fighting for survival, in states that Trump won by serious margins, I think we can get four or five of those. And in the House, where, again, I just want to make the math really, really simple for you in the House. Republicans right now have 236, Democrats 193, right? 236, 193. But what you've got to remember, there's only one number you got to remember, that's 218, because that's one more than half of 435, which is how many people are in the House. So 218 is what you need to keep or gain the majority, right? 218. Right now, there are about 200 that are Republican or leaning Republican. There are about 200 that are Democrat and leaning Democrat. That makes 400. Leaving roughly 35 that are up for grabs. Whoever gets 18 of those 35 is your next majority. And that's getting half of them. That's getting half of them. But that also gives us zero margin for error. That in some of the ones there are probably about 25 races that are viewed as leaning Republican, and we can't lose any of them. We can't lose any of them. And we probably need to pick up a couple of them. I think there are about 15 that are viewed as leaning Democrat. And we need to probably poach a couple of those. And I got to tell you, if the election were a couple of weeks ago, or even if it were today, I think that I know that the Kavanaugh hearings were in the House. But listen, people look at the news, they watch the news, and it is absolutely possible for someone to take a look at the ridiculous behavior of Cory Booker and Kamala Harris and Dick Durbin and Dianne Feinstein and Sheldon Whitehouse and Richard Blumenthal. And hold it against every Democrat they see, including the Democrat running for Congress in the district where they live. And if their behavior, because that is the Democratic Party, that is today's Democrat Party. And I don't know how dispiriting it is to actual Democrats. We only have that interesting walk away movement where people go, ooh, liberalism, don't like it anymore. I dream about that. It's fantastic. I don't know if a whole lot of people are doing that. But if, to whatever degree the people are, that's great. But the X factor that we can rely on is Republican motivation to get up off the couch and vote and deliver these people the rebuke that they so richly, richly deserve. We are in Waco. Andrew, hey, Mark Davis, welcome. How are you?
Hey, Mark, how are you?
Good.
I've got to not disagree with you, just take a little exception to calling Rob O'Rourke genuine. There's nothing genuine about that. He's a con man. He's coming across with a nickname that his dad and purposely gave him so he could, you know, win as a Democrat in El Paso.
When he was 6 years old? He's been called Beto all of his life. Talk about things that
read
matter.
Read the story. His dad said it was purposeful. His nanny gave him a nickname. All his money comes from the Coats. There's nothing genuine. Right. The guy's a good reader. He's not a good speaker. He's a good reader.
Here's the thing. Here's what you got to do. Sometimes here's what you've got to do. And again, I don't disagree with anything really that you're saying. I am assessing someone's campaign skill set, okay? Examples of people who do not come across as sincere or genuine would be John Kerry, Al Gore, a bunch of others I could name.
But he's not people sincere. Who, he doesn't tell you what he thinks.
No, Andrew, you're not listening to what I'm saying. Because listen, is he full of crap? Of course he is. But in an assessment of someone's campaign skill set, let me give you some people who absolutely come across as relatable and come across as, okay? And that gives you Biden, Bill Clinton, okay? The Beto inclusion in that is here's a guy who can get out there and seem to be of the people, seem to have a caring connectivity with them. It has nothing to do with his policies. Right. Or any of this. You're coming at him in a partisan, ideological way. And you're right. But in assessing, if you ever have any interest in assessing, and that's not criticism, so the campaign skill set that somebody, for example, in Biden and Clinton, I mean, who I'm sure you obviously hold in low regard politically, but do you recognize the skill set that Clinton, the best example of all?
Clinton, not Biden. Okay. Biden insult a death group if someone doesn't have a mic on it.
And no one cares. And Joe Biden is an Amtrak riding, lunch pail, old school Democrat who has an authenticity and sincerity that Hillary Clinton could never dream of. And I thank God Joe Biden is 90 and probably not going to run again, because if he did, he'd give us a run.
You can have a quick point on 2020.
By all means, go right ahead. By all means.
I kind of find it funny that the two, I guess, I don't know if she's a leading candidate anymore, but the two leading candidates of theirs are people that try to relate or identify as a ethnic minority, and when they're really just two white liberals in O'Rourke and Warren.
O'Rourke has never stepped forward and said he actually is Hispanic.
He doesn't have to. He goes by the nickname. He's trying to fool people without saying it.
Well, it is funny. In the debate the other day, Ted Cruz talked about Hispanics and used the pronoun,
right.
Used the pronoun we, because everybody should know that in a Cruz-O'Rourke debate, there's one Hispanic on the stage, and it's not Beto. Andrew, thank you. Appreciate it greatly. 866-660-5759. Mark Davis, 851. Some 1980s Carly Simon.
Baby sneezes, mommy pleases, daddy breezes in.
Obviously, the great strength of Carly Simon is from early albums like No Secrets, Anticipation, etc., etc. Hotcakes. But in 1987, she had an album called Coming Around Again, and it was kind of a masterpiece.
I know nothing stays the same, but if you're willing to play the game, it's coming around again.
All right, we're coming around again right after the 9 o'clock news, so grab a line. We're going right back to your calls, 866-660-5759. And plenty of opportunity for you to get in touch and learn about some stuff going on in the news as we reach our way toward Mike Gallagher at 10. So sit tight. 1 hour to go right here on the Mark Davis Show for a Thursday on 660 AM. The Answer.
Goodbye.
three-star general, Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.